episode 333.
I'll go even further with it to see what can I do, how much further can I go, how many more authorizations can I get. It is the single most important driver in your business is to do a daily authorization sheet and track it. And it gives the service writers a sense of accomplishment, a feeling of I'm attributing something to the business other than just being the guy that's running around like crazy. It works.
It's about teaching shop owners to be more effective with their time and doing the right thing. Stop managing your business. Start coaching your team. Put your A team on the field and make sure they play at their A level every single day.
Welcome, aftermarketers, to Remarkable Results Radio. Listen to learn just one thing from today's episode on your journey to remarkable results.
Hello, fellow aftermarket professionals. So glad to have you here. I want to recognize you and thank you for being a loyal listener. Your support fuels my engine to continue to uncover great information and guests to feed your aftermarket learning curve. Welcome to episode 333 with Keith Benline and Jeremy O'Neill. We are talking about a 10-step plan to growing your shop to $1 million and beyond. This is a must-listen for everyone in the aftermarket. Even if your business is doing $1 million plus, $1.5 million or $2 million and higher, this episode just may give you a new insight or two to hone your skills even more. I'd like you to share this episode linked with a friend so that we duplicate or even triplicate the effect that the podcast can have to raise all ships for the industry. And thanks to Federal Mogul Motor Parts for making this interview possible. When you need to search for parts, get the latest technical updates, or sign up for some garage loyalty program swag for both techs and shops, go to fmmotorparts.com. Connections are awesome, and I love it when you connect on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. A quick welcome to new Facebook friends of the podcast, Vera Thompson, Steve Scott, Rick Korn, Mike Cooper, and Rob Choiser, and new LinkedIn connections, Cassandra Dorr, Todd Fleming, and Bill Horsborn. I have a convenient page with every social link at remarkableresults.biz/social. Here's another interview recorded at Vision KC 2018. And joining me in the Vision studio is longtime friend of the podcast, Jeremy O'Neill from Freedom Automotive and Advisor Fix, and shop owner and business trainer coach, Keith Benline. Keith is sharing his 10 steps to $1 million shop. We got in deep in the discussion, and so this episode is a little longer than usual. You may have to listen over a few chunks of time because I know how valuable your time is. However, so is this discussion valuable to you as you positively will gain some great insights on a formula for success. The goal of these 10 steps is to give you the freedom to have a stronger work-life balance, to give you more time with the family, and lead your people to run your business. Keith shares the specific order that these steps need to be followed as there is a specific formula to his success. See the show notes for a highlight of these steps at remarkableresults.biz/E333. Now enjoy Great Aftermarket Talk Radio. A formula for shop success and freedom. Hey, everybody. Back at Vision 2018, Carm Capriotto in studio with Jeremy O'Neill from Advisor Fix. Hello, friend.
Hey, Carm. How are you?
I'm great.
It's good to see you.
Thank you. And meet Keith Benline, new to the podcast from Roberts Auto Service in San Diego.
Thanks for having me here. Nice meeting you.
Jeremy gave me a little background of your incredible success over the years. I'm always interested to interview someone who never goes into the shop and, you know, has an incredibly great and profitable business and basically say, no, that can't happen. Are you kidding me? How's that work?
It can happen. You have to set it up right. It's not just going to happen on its own. There's steps you have to go through in order to accomplish that process. And it takes a different skill set. A lot of shop owners might not quite have the business skill set that they need to set that up yet. And it's not the skill set of working on cars. It's the skill set of working with people and working on people.
So there's no pixie dust. There's no Disney magic here. I mean, so how many hard years of work does it take to pull off something like this? Or is it more smart work?
Smart work. I'm a big believer in smart work. I see a lot of good folks work hard and don't get the results they want. I'm a big believer in working smart. I mean, you have to work hard, don't get me wrong. But if you work smart, it'll pay more dividends working hard in the long haul.
You created a program called the 10 Steps to $1 Million Shop.
I did.
Excites me. It really does. I'm interviewing the top 10% of the industry, attempting to get the message to the next 40%. And every time we get someone to come on to want to tell their story of that success pathway, of their remarkable results, I think it's really healthy for our listener. It's really healthy for our industry. And it's really healthy for the people that are really successful. But one of the things that they want, they got a great bottom line and they're building a good culture, but they still think they're working too hard. You know, they're working in their business, but they're actually there too often. And they would love to find a little bit more work-life balance. Is that part of one of your magic 10 steps?
It absolutely is. I think one of the biggest challenges I've seen shop owners is letting go. Everyone is afraid to let go and empower their people. And that is so important. And until you can get that skill set and that understanding, it's going to be hard to accomplish. I taught a course recently called Management is Dead by Advisor Fix. And in that course, I emphasize this exact point that you have to coach your people these days. Management, waiting and reacting and trying to change behavior that way no longer works. You can see it today with Amazon.com, how they're putting so many other companies out of business. You go to a shopping mall these days, and where are all the stores? It looks like a ghost town. This is changing so fast, and companies like Sears and these other longtime retailer companies, they're practicing management philosophy instead of current coaching philosophy with their people, and by the time they react to what's happened, it's too late. They're getting close to falling Chapter 11, bankruptcy, and it's no different in the automotive repair business. You have to empower your people, coach your people, and then let go and let them be who they are.
So under coaching empowerment, it's really about being a good leader.
Yes.
And tell me the day, the light bulb moment when Keith figured out that leadership was it.
I've always had an uncanny ability to not try to make people necessarily do things exactly the way I would want them to do them, right? It's the beauty of life and what makes it go around is the diversity that we all have. Everybody in this room has a skill set that I don't have. Jeremy's got one that is phenomenal. Lindsay's got one that's phenomenal. You have one that's phenomenal that I could never accomplish. Why would I want to diminish that? I had a little help before I bought my shop. I worked for one of the consulting companies in the automotive repair business for 5 years. So I got to learn a lot and read a lot of business books about this stuff. And there was one book that really changed my life and my thinking. It was called Now Discover Your Strengths. And when I read that book and I realized what my five strengths were, I realized that what I was doing wasn't maximizing those strengths. And I said, the only way I'm going to maximize my ability is I either need to go become a manager for some corporation somewhere. But since I didn't have a huge college background, chances of that happening were slim. Or I said I could go buy my own business and implement these strengths that I have. So that's what I did. I bought the business. I implemented these strengths. One of those strengths was, I believe it's called Relator, and it talks about identifying strengths of each person in your business and how to make them use those strengths without trying to contain them, you know? And it's like, I use Tiger Woods as an example, right? Here is a super talented golfer. A manager, if Tiger Woods had to work under a manager, you'd probably destroy Tiger Woods because you'd spend all the time trying to help him fix this little weakness that he has. And in the meantime, when he's on and he's killing it,
he has to play to his strengths.
Exactly.
I took the test. I found out what my five strengths were.
Oh, you did?
Oh, yeah. And what's so interesting is that when I first read them, Jeremy and Keith, I said, this can't be right. I was in denial that those were my top five strengths. So I downloaded the app, read all about those five. It's in the book. And I started to realize that it got me and that I was a fool to fight what my real strengths were. And it was about when I was going to make a career change and go into podcasting, and I realized that those top five strengths made me, I don't want to say the success that I am today, but my continued success that it is. So big step for people. Find out what your strengths are. Play to them. Find the people who need to do the things that you're not good at.
And I have a question for Keith, because I'm, shop owner now dealing with the letting go part of things, right? So going back to building, Robert's Auto Service and the moment you decided to let go, how'd you deal with the emotional side of that? Because there's a big emotional, and maybe a lot of shop owners that are listening to this are dealing with the same thing. Like, they know what they need to do. They just can't get it in action. Because, I mean, let's face it, when, for a lot of shops that aren't very successful, and one of the things that you've always been a mentor for me, Keith, as far as, and I've looked up to you for guidance in life and in business, and I just admire what you've done with your shop. How do you let go, and how do you deal with the emotional side of it? Because I find my emotions keep my hand wrapped around it because of the pain that comes with it. So there's a little bit of pain you have to go through, right, to actually let go, but on the other side is what?
Jeremy, I also know that you're a father. I'm also a father of three girls, and I have six grandkids. We don't want those grandkids to fail, make wrong decisions. But I don't know about you, but I notice when I'm raising my kids, they only listen to me so much, and then they just tune out and they do their own thing. And they learn more being their own independent person and making their own mistakes and learning from it than me trying to tell them. And it's no different being a shop owner. We sit and we worry about what could happen, problems, failures, stuff, right? You almost need to allow some of that stuff to happen and work with your people to improve on it. Try to not have it happen again. Let them know the thinking behind what happened. I'll never forget when I bought the shop, we had a manager, George, and he'd been there a long time, and he wasn't as good with new people as I would like. And as Yelp was coming out at that time, and we got a few bad Yelp complaints, and I was looking at it going, you know, this is totally George's personality. But if I try and change his personality and just completely focus on what he's doing wrong and what I want to see different, he's not going to change his behavior. He's going to hunker down. He's going to get defensive, and it's just going to destroy the relationship between the two of us. I'm going to lose his brain, his motivation, his heart, and it's just going to get worse. So what I'm trying to avoid, I'm actually making worse. So what I need to understand is step back and go, okay, now wait a minute. What does George do really well? For all the longtime customers, they love him to death. They'll buy anything he says that he says need to fix with their car. He's a little rough with the younger crowd. And so what you do is you manage around it. And this is what the book of Now Discover Your Strengths talks about. You manage around that. So rather than trying to fix George with that, minimize those situations he's in. Find someone else that you can bring into the office that can deal more with those younger customers and steer them towards that person. In the meantime, you do have talks with George about, hey, you see the Yelp review, what happened here? What do you think happened? And I don't try to change him overnight, and I don't try to say, hey, that was bad. You just talk about it. And you'll find out that he doesn't want to have the bad review either. He'll try to, in his own brain, yeah, why did that happen? And if you do it the right way and coaching him, he comes around to it, and over time, not going to happen right away, it comes around, and then you can start to let go.
It's the hardest thing for a technician turned shop owner to do.
It takes a different set of mindset and skills. Technicians are so thorough at what they do. They're so meticulous, and they take that mindset into owning a shop, and they want everything to be meticulous and everything to be perfect. Well, I hate to tell you this, but business is not perfect. You know, I had someone tell me once that growth is 3 steps forward and it's 2 back. We all want it to be step up, step up, step up, increase. And it isn't. You do 3 steps up, woo, woo, and then boom, 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 2 steps back, right?
That's right.
And then 3 steps up. But over the process, you're climbing.
And you're learning and you're creating wisdom, and hopefully you don't make that mistake 2 times in a row.
So that's the philosophy, and it's hard to let go, but I wish there was an easy way to say do this and you can let go, because it really takes a different set of mind thinking, and it takes really taking that risk of letting go. Now, you can't not educate your people or let them know what you want, right? So that, I'm not saying don't do that. I'm saying educate your people, let them know what you want, let them know what your culture is, what your expectations are, but don't try to make them mini versions of you, because they're not. They have a unique personality, they have unique traits, and you need to maximize that. Like we talked about with Tiger Woods, don't try to make Tiger Woods you. What makes Tiger Woods great is the way he is, right? Maximize that. So understand what your people can do really well, what they might not be able to do so well, and learn to work within that. Let go. There's going to be some mistakes and crashes. It just happens. Fix it and move on.
So you build a great culture in your business, and you've got 5, maybe 4 or 5 values set up, and you look to assess your people. Not only are you looking at their strengths and are they in the right seat, but you also are finding out if they conform to the values of the company. And if they do, then you got superstars on your hand.
Yes.
I'm talking with Anthony Frohwein, a technical product specialist with Federal Mogul Motor Parts. What are the techs saying about your visit?
Every single time that I set up a training, I try to position the van inside the shop. You know, you're part of their house at that point. Whenever you set aside that time, you tell them that you're coming in, you're providing a lunch, and you're really bringing something of meat and value to the table. Once they get a taste of it, really, by the time you're done, they're asking, when can you come back?
When can you come back? Or, hey, what else you got in your bag of tricks?
Exactly. Exactly.
So the greatest outcome of your visit to a professional shop
is just to really make a difference in their everyday procedures, to maximize the premium end of the product that's being installed. But ultimately, for me being an ex-shop owner as well, is to maximize their profitability in installing the part right the first time and having a happy customer. I always say happy customer is like a happy wife. Happy wife, happy life. Same thing goes with the customer.
I've heard that before. So you take a Wagner OEX pad and you put it into the hands of a technician. What happens?
First off, they're floored with the cut design on the front end. They'd never seen a brake pad like this before. And then you start to break it down into why it's cut the way it is and how it's application or platform specific, how the backing plates are no longer painted, they're zinc coated, and that's for tolerance level, so that way you don't have buildup on the ears and fitting into the hardware. I mean, you get into all the little nuances that they've changed around with that brake pad on top of the performance end of it. I mean, it's phenomenal. And then once they physically try the brake pad, either on a customer's car or their own vehicle, I've heard nothing but rave reviews about the brake pad.
Federal Mogul Motor Parts' Garage Gurus is your go-to source for the vehicle training, technology, and answers you need to keep your next job on track. On site, online, or on demand, the gurus are here to help keep your business and your career on the road to success. Visit fmgarageguru.com. And so what part is the people component in the 10 steps, Keith?
Yes. So that part is about coaching. I hit on that just a little bit a while ago, right? So that comes down in step number, I think it's 5 in the 10-step program, because the first thing you need to do is do some assessments and other stuff. So when you get into the people, now you're in steps 3, 4, 5, and 6.
Why don't we, instead of, we've never really defined them and we're jumping around a little bit, could you just kind of give us the list so our listener really can get a you know, a gut feel for what you're talking about?
So this is what I did when I worked for the other company and I consulted with shop owners, right? Step one is you got to have a current assessment of your business. If you're not happy about something, what is it you're not happy about? What's not right? So you can look at everything. You can look at the numbers of this business. You can look at key performance indicators compared to other shops in the area. You can look at their personnel, how they're everything's set up. So it's a basic assessment. For those shop owners, you do it looking at their financial statements. Is it matching what their service writing program is telling them? Their service writing program might be telling them, hey, you're doing great. You're making this area. You're making all this money. But their financial statement every month says, no, you're not making anything. So where is that money at? So understanding that current assessment, getting this thing on the same page. So step one, current assessment.
Financial
and also just general overall business current assessment. This is what I see financially. This is where your business is target-wise. This is what we know can be done based on other shops in your area. This is what I'm seeing. You have too many technicians. I can tell you right off the bat, when I bought the shop I had, the guy had 9 technicians, 2 parts guys, and 3 shuttle drivers. And I told him, Bill, I said, you're crazy. Now, there's not any other shop in San Diego that comes even close to that. You know, they have 1 shuttle driver. They don't, most of them don't have a parts guy. If they do, they have 1. And he had 3 service advisors. And the numbers that he was doing did not justify that in any way, shape, or form. He was wondering why he wasn't making the money that he used to make back in the late 90s when business was booming. So I told him, you right off the bat, without even getting into great detail, I can tell you're way overstaffed. You've got to make changes and cuts. And he loved his guys. He'd been with them so long. It was hard for him to do, but he did do it. He kind of had it happen to him. Some of them left and tried to go start their own shop. And so if you leave people in a situation where it isn't working out and they're not happy, you know what? They're going to find happiness somewhere else. So that's another reason why it helps you make these decisions you need to make to let go. So that's the current assessment. Step 2 is the improvement. Okay, so where do we want to be now? Where do you want to be financially? Where do you want to be with your key performance indicators? How can we set targets for you to get those key performance indicators? And what should your shop look like based on what we know other successful automotive repair shops look?
Are you talking about a budget?
Talking about their key performance indicators, like their average repair order, their gross profit on labor, gross profit on parts.
Wouldn't KPIs also be in one? I mean, if you're going in and saying your headcount versus your volume, headcount versus job, it's in there too?
Not so much in the key performance indicator. I mean, it can be, but you can look like, what do successful shops run from a service rider to technician?
Headcount would be different.
Service rider handling 3 technicians? Is he handling 4 technicians? Is he handling 1 technician? So you could look at those as far as to say, how would you like to be set up right now? You've got 3 service riders and you only have 4 technicians. Do you need that ratio? Can you accomplish with 2 service riders and not have to have 3? You know, looking at the financial statement and breaking that down, going, now, why is it that your service writing program is saying that you're making this money, but your financial statement isn't? And sit down, going with the shop owner, and, you know, I mean, and this can get really personal, but where are some of these expenses here that might not be getting reported to help you with cash flow? Because cash flow brings a whole different ball game. You know, if you're on a 30-day credit with all your parts companies, and you had a really big month the month before, and the next month you have a horrible sales month. Well, guess what? All those 30-day parts bills come due. Voila, cash flow problem. So, and anybody's been in business long enough understands that dynamic. So that's step two, is setting the performance goals and where you want to be. Step number three, in my opinion, is the single most important part of your business. I'm going to say it the way it is, advisor fix. Your service advisors are mini owners. They're talking to your customers. They're handling complaints. They're dealing with your technicians. They hear all the garbage day in and day out. And yet, what's in it for them? You know, where is their home run? So service advisors, I think, is the first step.
You're really, what you're saying is that Jeremy's company comes in and teaches and trains and coaches the service advisor, because we know it is as important as CEO and technician training that service advisor has just got to be trained.
And yes.
Jeremy, you've got to have great statistics of what happens to a, you know, person coming out of a year-long coaching program.
Well, absolutely. I mean, we have, you know, indicators, and we look for the ROI on anything that we do. I think one thing that Keith has done really well, when you talk, go back to step two, and you talk about the numbers and KPIs and financial data. As a shop owner, you know, when you look at your P&L, you're looking at 30 days of old data, right? Well, how does that help you on Monday morning? And what we've developed is whittling those back end numbers down to an actionable plan where at any moment of the day, like Keith right now can get a text from his shop, they'll know where they're at. Where are they at with authorizations? Have they put enough in the pipeline? What's coming out of the pipeline? And it's that scorecard that really helps. And, you know, doing the assessment, where are you weak at? Lead conversion? You know, most shops don't need more marketing. They get plenty of leads. They just suck at, I'm sorry, they suck at lead conversion. They're converting 20% of the leads. So that's really fine-tuning and customizing the curriculum for what the shop needs, but knowing where you want to go and then getting it down to that daily scorecard is so awesome. And Keith's done a great job.
So you're really saying is that step three is service advisor performance, and you're just basically saying hire Jeremy.
Pretty much, or a company that can do it, because here's the thing is if I'm going to be coaching you and we look, do step one, okay, here's where you're at. Step two, here's where you want to be. Step three is how well do I really know your people? You know them better than I do. You've had them there. I can tell you ratios and stuff, but I really don't know your service advisor, what he can do or not do. So the first thing we do is we get him an advisor fix. We put him under an assessment test. We find out his skills and strengths, just very similar to Now Discover Your Strengths, and find out what the service advisor does very well. We put him through the course, and it's a very hands-on course. So it isn't just, well, this is where you should be, and this is your ratios. It's also now, let's work with you and give you the actual tools you'll need to increase those ratios. How do you talk to people? How do you overcome objections? All that stuff. It's very hands-on, personal, one-on-one coaching they get.
Am I assuming that overall you're really suggesting to a shop owner that they have to have a business coach?
It wouldn't hurt. I'm not saying everybody has to. Some people are more motivated than others.
To get through these steps, though, would be nice.
Wait till we get to step 10, and I'll show you where we're going.
Step 10?
Ooh.
Yeah. I was jumping ahead on you. Okay.
The other thing, too, it's really, you know, what I admire most about Keith and watching him work is his ability to be there when that coaching moment presents itself. So his service writer, James, can get off the phone, hang up the phone, and he writes down, he's got a win, right? Oh, I just sold a $900 brake job. Well, there was a coaching moment there. The customer declined the transmission service, the struts, the alignment, and he'll coach his advisor right then and there while it's fresh. Management deals with past issues. Coaching is current. It's relevant. It's changing today to put more money in the bank, to generate more five-star reviews, and that's really what, you know, the program's all about. But, and it's not like, this is not about, you know, advisor fix or the program. It's about teaching shop owners to be more effective with their time and doing the right thing. Stop managing your business. Start coaching your team. Put your A team on the field to make sure they play at their A level every single day.
Yes, and the course management is dead that I did for advisor fix just a month ago. I really talked about that, about coaching. And I'm going to talk in the later steps of how the shop owner can do it. It's not as hard as you think. Jeremy just hit the nail on the head. I don't go back there and hover over my service advisors and listen for every little detail. You can hear when they start to struggle. You're in the shop and all of a sudden you know the natural flow, the natural talk, and all of a sudden you hear more trying to overcome an objection, more something, and you hear them go, okay, and they hang up the phone. That's your time to go talk to them. Oh, what happened there?
Okay, so you're really trying to re-energize the juice that you know they had. They stumbled.
Yes.
If they were doing a good job, they didn't have coaching. I mean, what you're saying is you can give all the great lessons and training in the world, but you have to continue to coach that swing thought, if you will.
Yes, especially for service advisors, because their jobs are so scatterbrained throughout the day. They get pulled so many different directions. It's easy to go in what I'm going to call automatic pilot. You know, I'm going to answer this phone. I don't feel like doing this objection or getting too much into, yeah, this is what it is. Too bad. So sad. Click.
That's a great point.
And that's the time for the owner to come over and just, okay, let's refresh. Let's take a step back.
So you're smart enough to realize that there's a wall that some people hit, and through being a good leader and a good coach, you help them through it.
Yes, absolutely. And it's so important.
Talk them off the wall.
Talk them off the wall. Got it. If you wait until the week is over and then look at their results and go, well, what would happen here? Your phone conversion leads are down. Your sales goals are down. All that is negative now, because all you're telling them is all the things they didn't do and all the things they did wrong. You didn't encourage them when they got off that phone, talked about what happened. Why did they say no? They said they had no money. Was it their car? And you have a personal opportunity right there to sit there and go, well, did you think about this? I mean, what are they going to do with that car then if they don't want to fix it? Did you find out? I mean, are they just going to trade it in? I mean, I can tell you financially, my opinion is better to put $1,000 in that car. If they go buy a new car, how much is the down payment going to be? How much are the, you know, payments going to be? How much is insurance and registration when they get it next year, especially in California where they keep raising all those prices on everything? Bam. That's the importance of step three, is that your service advisor is really the face of your company. And if you don't want to have to be there as a business owner, you've got to have service advisors that can represent you. They're not going to be, don't expect them to be many versions of you. Let them be who they are, but they're representing your company, they're representing you, and they can do it very well. If you empower people and do it the right way and let go, you'd be surprised what your company can do without you being there.
The scary thought is your service writer actually has his foot on the throttle of your business, and he can take it too fast or too slow. So it's you know, just like a race car. It's got to be fine-tuned, and you want full throttle at the right time. And at other times, you need a more finesse delivery on that throttle to get you through the corner.
Great point.
Now, I start with service advisors because that's where the natural process starts in your automotive repair business, whether they're on the phone calling you with questions or where they show up on your front service drive. Service riders for the first person they come in contact to. So for my opinion, that's the first enactment with your business. That's the face of your business. So let's start with the service advisors and make sure that, you know, get them.
Do these steps have to be followed in order? Is that what you're trying to tell?
I would highly recommend it. And you'll see when we get to step eight, I'll show you what happens if you put one in front of the other. It can destroy your business. And even though you think you're doing a good thing, you can make it actually work.
Number four.
And get better. So, all right. So number four, we're going to get into now, and I group these together, shop operations and technicians, right? So we all know the technician's got to be good. They've got to fix cars right. They got to figure out what's wrong quickly. Then they got to produce for you. What I have found is most of these shop owners, they have pretty good technicians. They'd all like to get better ones, of course, and that'll be a later step. But so now analyzing the technicians that the shop has, right? Looking at their productivity, their efficiency on a weekly basis, looking at their diagnostic ability, looking at their comeback ratios, determining again with these technicians, making an assessment, are these good technicians? Are they not good technicians? And what I found is the shop owner can give you more information on that than you can as a person, because he's there every day. He's seeing what the technicians do well, what they don't do well. And you can certainly improve technicians like you can service advisors. A lot of technical training out there, a lot of coaching opportunities as a shop owner. It's no different with the technician. When he's getting his head beat against the wall and he can't figure a car out, that's your time to sit there and coach with them. And you'll know when it happens, because normally it's a good rhythm a technician has. He's got that car diagnosed pretty quickly. He's got an inspection sheet for you. You're on the phone with the customer getting authorized. You're getting it back to him. He's getting the work done. You're getting the car delivery done. The car's great. Customer's happy. You're getting a 5-star review, right? When that process slows up somewhere, like, he's been on that car a little longer than I think he should have. What's going on? What is this part coming from this part company? That is he trying to throw a part in there? You know, you start to, okay, what's going on? Then you go out and talk to him, you know, and one of the great ways you can coach technicians, is that technicians can get frustrated with service advisors.
No way.
Big time.
Never.
Because if the technician feels like, look, I'm recommending all this work and it's not getting authorized, and we don't use the word sales in my shop, we use authorizations because customers authorize, we don't sell them anything. That'll destroy a technician. He won't stay, or he'll just lose hope and he won't give you the inspections anymore. Why should I? I'm doing all this great work on this car to check it out and get these recommendations, and I'm giving it to the service advisor and it's coming back with nothing, or one, or an oil change, wiper blades.
Confidence and trust in each other's job.
Confidence and trust in each other's job. And they want to know that you as an owner care. Now, that doesn't mean you have to do it every day, not even every week. It's randomly. Randomly, you should walk through your shop. You should talk to your technicians. Hey, let me ask you, how are things here? You know what? Tell me about the service advisor. Tell me about James. How's he doing? Do you think he's doing? Is he getting things authorized for you? How's the workflow? Do you think you're getting enough work? Do you think it's being dispatched fairly? Are there any safety in the shop, safety issues that you've been seeing that you feel are being ignored?
You are asking questions you know the answer to.
Yes.
But you got to get them to talk, get engaged. You want to know what's going on inside the gray matter.
A great coach knows that the team needs to be all in, bought in, that they feel they have a say on things, empowerment on things. I mean, ultimately, you're the owner, so you can do whatever you want. But I'm telling you, if you make your people feel like they're the owners, they're empowered, they're in control, that's when they start saying, get out of the way, owner. You go home. We'll got this. We'll make this place happen. They almost don't want you there. You know, which, you know, I wouldn't recommend always never being there. You need to always be, you know, spot checking and stuff.
I think that's a great goal that I think everybody should stop for a moment and let that sink in. That, you know, you don't necessarily have to be at your business if you're running it right. It's almost the ultimate reward. But, you know, I just go back a minute or two. You know, years ago I learned, you know, one of the roles of a leader is to ask questions I know answers to. And if you don't know the answers, then shame on you.
You can get surprised sometimes.
Well, I know that, and I think it's an art and a skill, and it's something that you have to practice, because you, without being a micromanager, you still need to know what's going on in your business, in all areas of it.
Yeah, and the other thing to that point is, you know, we've done a lot of on-site coaching and training and observing, and when you do get this feedback from your technicians, it's important to act on it. And I see a lot of times a shop owner will go in and they'll be guilty of, okay, yeah, so you have any safety issues? And the guy says, well, yeah, you know, this extension cord of this outlet over here is loose. Oh, okay. And nothing gets done on it. You know, so when they tell you what needs to be done, take the feedback and be earnest with it and really take it to heart and make changes so they see that you're definitely listening to you care. Because if you don't, you just brush it, sweep it under the rug, it definitely sends the wrong message.
And then the last part of that step four is shop operations. How is work being dispatched flow? Are the service riders dispatching it fairly? Are they favoring one technician? Are the other technicians capable enough to do it? Service riding programs, are they efficient? Are they working right in your shop? Is it old and antiquated? Should it be re-looked at, reassessed? Making sure the workflow, the shop operations, the service management program is all smooth, flowing, modern stuff that will help you and help the technicians and service riders do their job.
Is DVI in that step?
It can be, yes.
Okay.
So basically, that's step four. So where we've gone now is step one, we've assessed the business. Step two, we've set the improvement goals. Step three, now we're sending the service rider into coaching and trying to see what's there. And then we're also now doing that with our technicians. And by the way, on a side note, the technicians, they absolutely love it when you make them feel like they're part of running the business, because they don't get to do that. They're back in the shop every day, fix that car, fix that. All of a sudden, you're asking them ideas on how to run the business and stuff. They eat that up. Then they'll take a bullet for you start doing that stuff.
There's an awful lot of shop owners who said, I'm a tech. Technicians who have become a shop owner, and when you dig down deep inside, like I usually do in the interviews, a lot of them have said, I just didn't feel respected. They didn't want to hear from me.
Yep, absolutely.
I was a number, not a person.
Man, you just hit on something. If we can pause on the 10 steps for a minute, something I want to talk about as personal. And it's part of why I've accomplished what I've accomplished. We somehow get... Those of us that know business very well, we start to get so business-minded about every little percentage, every little number, we start to forget that it's the people that are making those numbers happen. And we start to not treat those people like people and human beings, and we start to treat them like numbers in a business. And once we start down that road, we need to be careful, because you can destroy people fast and destroy your business fast doing that and not get the results you're looking for.
You're just a KPI to me.
Exactly.
And I agree with you. Destroy your business.
When you're in that shop, don't be afraid to talk to your employees about personal stuff. You know, legitimate, genuine concern. You see a technician's not having a good day, just talk to them. You know, they're not always going to talk to you, but when they do, be there, listen, care. They're people. Treat them like people. Respect them like people. And you know what? I found when you do that, they usually hit those numbers without you having to make much effort at all.
It's an amazing phenomenon.
It is an amazing phenomenon.
It just is. I've seen it happen.
Yes. That's what I do a little differently than you might find other shop owners that are successful and do well. I'm just very people oriented. It's just the way I want to run the business. It's the culture that I have there.
So culture's coming up.
Culture's coming up. Okay. Yes. All right. So let's move on now. We've got our advisor fixed. We've got our shop operations and technicians. That takes us now to step number five. Now it's assessment time. And here's some powerful questions. Assessment of operations and staff. Your service advisors, now after they've gone through advisor fix, now that you've worked with them and coached them, three questions. Can they do it? Not everybody has that talent set. You might find out that I've got the wrong person in the wrong position. I want him to be a service advisor. He's a good smiley face person, but just not comfortable. If someone wants to say, I don't want to fix it, ask him why, or just try to persuade them the things he should fix.
Is it competence and capabilities here?
Yes.
Okay.
So it's very interesting. I'll start with a story. So about 6 months ago, I get on this coaching call with a service advisor, and we just brought her in. She went through our initial assessment and kind of had some questions about, you know, where she was at on the assessment, where she's going to fit in. And then the very first call, the negativity that was coming out of that was a very big red flag. So basically, I released her from the coaching program, called the shop owner up and said, hey, here's where we're at, did this for these reasons. My assessment of this is not going to work out in this position. Well, no, let's work it out. We'll make it work. So sometimes we try to fit square pegs into round holes, and I don't care how big of a hammer you have. Yeah, you might get that square peg down to a round, you know, shape, but the damage has already been done. So after this, can they do it? Absolutely. The attitude is definitely prime and key to that for sure. And I just want shop owners to be aware of it. Deep down, I think we know when we have the wrong person in the position. So I remember, you know, Carm asked me a question about one of my managers. He goes, you know, so your manager must be really good. And I paused and I said, yeah, he's all right. And I don't know if you know this, Carm, but that stuck with me for like a month. I went back and I kicked my own ass. And I'm like, Jeremy, when anybody asks you about your service advisor, service manager, yeah, my guy is a rock star. And I couldn't answer that question honestly. So I'm like, I've got the wrong person at my counter, right? And then I started adding up going, all right, how much money is he costing me? And I'm like, all right, I got to make the change. So it was painful for 2 months. Thank you, Carl.
You never sent me the residual check.
I know, right? Check's in the mail, sir. But for 2 months, I went and ran the counter. It was very painful, very stressful. But guess what? What we have now is a business that's a lot better that never would have gotten to this next level.
I love what you just said. If you stop to think about it, when you get asked a tough question, you can't come up with the right answer. There's a sign. Believe you me. Usually you're really good, confident, you're fluent, and all of a sudden you find yourself being a And the key is, you both hit on it, you have to listen to those moments in time. They mean things. And sometimes it may not hit you right away like it did you. And I've always been a person who's, you know, I've always said, got to rewind your day. You got to go back. You got to find those moments that make cream to the top. And you say, that was great. Learn from it. What happened there? And you think it through. And then you register that somewhere. That if that, you know, that maybe it's an important thing I need to do now. Or you register it, and if it ever happens again, that's two.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yes. So the next question after the service advisors is, can they do it? So let's say we've coached them, they've gone to Advisor Fix, and yeah, they can do it. There's no reason they can't do it. The next two questions are, will they do it, and do they want to do it? And this is going to tie in with a step later. Will they do it? Do they want to do it? This ties into everything I've talked about to this point about people, right? If your people feel like they're just a number, they're just helping you make more money, will they do it? If you're constantly not engaging with your people and empowering people, will they do it, and will they want to do it? So you not only have to coach, you have to tie in now as a business owner a way to make them want to do it and that they will do it. And we'll get to that in a later step. It's no different with your technicians. Can they do it? Will they do it? And do they want to do it?
I wrote down born to.
And the want to, one of the things I teach in almost every class I do is you have to bring your want to attitude to work every single day. And look at the restaurant industry, right? You have a server who has to have the job. They need it to get through college. It's not their chosen career. You get a different service experience versus that career server who wants to do the job, right? Complete 9-day difference. And that's where when you generate those 5-star reviews, those organic reviews where the customer leaves so amazed at the service experience they got, every single person that tied into that service experience wants to do
the
job.
They were born to.
Absolutely.
All right. So the last part of step five, after service advisors and technicians, can they, will they, do they want to? Then look at your operations. Are they hurting or helping you hit your goals? And that's a good question to ask on anything. Is this person helping me or hurting me hitting my goals? Is these operations hurting me or helping me hit my goals? And it's not just your goals. It's the shop goals. It's their own personal goals and what they want out of it. So that's step five. So what we've done at this point is we've kind of assessed, set improvement goals, looked at our people, coached them and empowered them to see what we got and if they can do it and get on the team with us to help us hit the goals. Now we need to make some important decisions starting with step six. So step six is very simple. You have two choices at this point. You either keep the employee or you get rid of the employee. And that's a tough decision. It's not easy to make. I've been there. Anyone's owned an auto repair shop long enough has been there. Hiring, firing, or keeping. So at this step, you have to decide, do I keep this person? Do they have the ability? Can they help me at the goals? If not, do I fire the person? And if I fire the person, now I got to find someone else. How do I hire? Right? So that leads to a whole lot of extra work.
You end up having to hire smarter and better if you end up terminating because you had the wrong person in the wrong job. And now that you are into step six, you've learned an awful lot about the direction of your business and the kind of people you need to fill the seats.
Exactly. Yes. And what's hard about the hiring, firing part of this is that you've heard about employee turnover and the cost of employee turnover. And yes, it's huge. If you got good people, great people, keep them there, do what you got to do. You'd be surprised if you just do the earlier steps I talked about with the coaching and letting people be people, treat them like human beings. They'll take a bullet for you. I mean, they will bend over backwards to help you with your business and they'll stay with you. Even you might not be paying the most money out there. They'll stay with you because they love the environment. Here's something that I always tell people. There's no corporate ladder for any technician to climb that's working for an independent automotive repair shop. There's no corporate ladder a service advisor can climb working at an independent auto repair shop. People that go to work on Monday mornings and go work for corporations, they're saying, you know what? I can climb this corporate ladder. There's going to be this big 401k, this big pension thing for me. I might be a divisional manager one day. What does a technician and a service writer see every Monday morning when they're coming into your shop? What is there to climb? It's the same thing that was last week, same thing the week before, and it's going to be the same week the next week after that, and the same thing the next week after that. So I'm not stupid. I know when my guys wake up Monday morning and, oh, here we go, another week of work. What am I doing with my life? You know, I'm working for Keith Benline. That's all my life is right now. But you know what? That guy's an awesome guy. He really cares about us. He's made such a great family environment there. I wouldn't want to work anywhere else.
I have this great quote that I worked for a CEO a few years back who said, if it's not fun, it won't last. That's important to you.
Important to me. Not just fun, the genuine caring of people, you know, that environment that you make there. When you make it fun, you make it a place, then they'll stay there and work for Keith Benline for as long as they can. I mean, I can tell you that my number one technician, Terry's been with me 38 years. Now, we started with the previous owner of the business. I'm the second owner of the business. Bob Bloom's been with me 26 years. Dean Anderson's been, I'm giving these names out, everyone's going to start calling my shop and trying to scout my guys out of there.
No way.
Dean Anderson's
guess
been
why
there.
They're not going to leave?
Exactly.
Because you made the right environment.
And I know they get scouted. I know they've been, you know, scouted by
other shops.
You
should give out your phone number just so they can
I mean, Dean's been there 18 years. You know, my most recent hire, Paul's been there 5 years. Then I hired a new guy. He's been there 2 or 3 years, a younger kid that I really love that I'm molding and making into. So he's kind of my apprentice. James, my manager, has been there 14 years. They're staying there for a reason. Every Monday morning, those guys get up, and for 38 years, not necessarily 38, but I'm working for Keith Benline, and they're still there.
Keith, when you move on with someone, haven't you found out, though, the rest of the team kind of comes up to you and says, good move, boss?
I had to fire someone. I hired this gentleman who was at another shop across town competing with me, and he did a good job over there. They ran that business really good. But then that business started to struggle, and they almost lost their lease, and so they had to let him go. And I'd heard some things good and negative about him. I heard he was an ex-military guy, and he was really too military, and so a lot of guys didn't like him, but he was really good at sales, really good at getting numbers up. I needed to make a change in my front office. The recession had hit, and I had a general manager that was working 3 days a week, and it just wasn't working. I decided to let him go, and I interviewed this general manager. Blew me away in the interview, best interview I've ever seen in my life. I'm like, oh my gosh, this guy's going to take my business to the next level, right? He doesn't want me there. He's going to run the whole place. So I hire him. Within 90 days, I start to see some of these sides of what the other shop was talking about. He's very arrogant. He's very military. He's very, could be very unfriendly at times, right? So I was worried about my customer base and what was going to happen. Like, is this going to come through to my customers? Is it going to come through to my employees? He ran my front office for 5 years and got me tremendous numbers. I kept waiting for the numbers to tank, thinking, okay, if he's this way, those numbers are going to tank. My employees are going to come to me and they're going to say, I'm it. I'm done. I'm out. It took a while. Finally, in the last year he was there, last summer, we had not a good summer. The car counts went down way bigger than I've ever seen. And I'm like, okay, is this a sign? Then they bounced back. And I was like, well, maybe it's just an anomaly. Then they went down again. And as soon as that happened, as a coach, management is dead, wait too long and react. I made that decision right then and there. and I let him go. Now, at the same time, the technicians, I could tell, were not happy with him. They were not communicating with me anymore. They had given up communicating with me. They felt like I wasn't going to do anything, that this guy was just continuing to run the shop. When I let him go, the technicians came in with open arms. And, boss, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And the shop has been the piece of the shop. The numbers are up. The piece, everything is so much better. Hard decision for me. I mean, I liked him sincerely. And, you know, I've had a few issues with him since I've let him go. And the technicians have all come to me and said, if that guy does anything, you let us know. We'll go before the labor board. Anything that he's trying to pull, and we'll get your back.
Was the general manager surprised that you let him go?
No.
And you should never be surprised if you're getting let go, if you're a good coach and a good leader, because you're really trying to work with an individual to overcome their inefficiencies.
I had several times with him that I almost let him go. The most recent one was 9 months before that. I pulled him out of the shop, told him I was probably going to be letting him go, and he broke down crying, talking about all things going on in his life, give him another shot, you know, don't do it. And I said, okay, well, you know, we've had some issues, but this is it, you know. And I talked to him. He knew what the issues were, cultural issues of what I wanted, other things along those lines. And it wasn't a surprise to him. He goes, all right, I'll fix them. And I said, here's my concern. I was flat out honest. You'll fix them for 2 or 3 months, and you go right back to where you were.
No one should ever be surprised if they get let go if you're a good leader and a good coach.
So that's the thing about, you know, what you said when you triggered it. Did your people come together?
I'm glad you told the story. Thank you.
Hugely, they come together. Yes. So hiring, firing. So if you decide that guys aren't going to work out and you have to replace them, you've got to go look for them. Service advisors are a little easier to find than technicians, because they don't necessarily have to have the knowledge of cars. You can find great salespeople that are great communicators. And if they are sharp, they'll learn what they need to learn about cars to make the sales happen. Matter of fact, I lean more towards that than technicians that want to become service advisors. Okay. So that's step six. So now, you know whether you need to keep them, move on from them, find someone else. And if you do, you know, we can certainly help you with how you find technicians and service advisors. I'm not saying it's easy, but you have to have a different mindset when you look for people. I mean, I've been able to find people, and I can tell you, if you're not proactively always knowing who the good ones are out there, when you try to find someone, if you throw an ad in a paper or something, it never works. It's not good. So
ABR. ABR.
Always be recruiting.
Absolutely.
And building your bench and holding resumes and interview. What do you recommend? We interview a couple a month?
See, and the thing is, yeah, and it's not that hard. I mean, all you need to do is just find out. First of all, information. Who are the good guys out there? You'll start to learn more about him, because when you find out who he is, you'll find out from this person more about this person, more about this person. And as soon as you're comfortable and confident, you just pick up the phone, you call him, and you say, hi, I own Roberts Auto Service over here. I just have heard great things about you. I just wanted to say hi. Listen, I'm not trying to recruit you out of there, but if for whatever reason anything's ever changed over there, we'd always love to come talk to you over there. And then you'll find out if, you know, right then their response, no one ever says, oh, why did you call me? That's a horrible thing to do. What do they always say? Like, oh man, thanks. I don't get that appreciation from my own boss. This is awesome.
There's an awful lot of great tactics to find talent or to find interviews. And, you know, the podcast is littered with so many great, great ideas that guys have had success with. Open houses, and, you know, they'll have a major car house, open house, and they invite all the shop owners and all the techs of the area. And I remember hearing a great story, and I can't remember, maybe it was Patrick McHugh, and he says, yeah, we had this open house, and the guy walked in, Beamer specialist, and he goes, God, this could be my bay.
Love it.
Talk about, you know, eyes and ears and opportunity, and he hired him within a month.
What's important too, you know, with ABR, it's all about the relationship, and it's no different than in sales. Like, you know, I get this all the time. I saw something on Facebook today about, hey, does anybody have a good script for callbacks, right? Okay, well, if you're calling a customer back in 2 months and you're asking them for a sale, they're not even at your shop. They don't even want that phone call. So, I mean, that's different. You got to have different reasons and deeper care about people than just when you need something from them. So if I need a tech and I'm interviewing them, hey, I want you to come work with me. No, and then the relationship's over. Well, maybe Keith is a great technician in my town. Just the timing's not right. So keep that relationship going. And 6 months later, when the time is right, the opportunity may come.
Let's have coffee.
Yes.
That's the ticket.
Yeah, absolutely.
Let's have coffee. You just mentioned something about a script that made me think, is scripts the right way to go? Or are they too robotic? And will somebody learn it?
For interviewing?
No, for calling customers back.
Oh, I have a whole different mindset and philosophy. Right,
I know we're not here to talk about that. You know, scripting. Maybe you should come back and we should talk about scripting.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, yes, businesses, we need that. But I think it's consumers are shifting. Consumers are changing. We have to understand how they want the information. There's not one person on this planet that sits around on a Thursday afternoon at 2 o'clock and says, oh, my gosh, I hope that shop calls me because I really forgot to get my struts done. Oh, my gosh, is it them? Is it them? Oh, it's not them. I'm so disappointed. Let me call that shop. Who the heck gets those phone calls? Nobody does. So why waste your valuable, precious time making callbacks to actually alienate and upset your client base? There's a better system and process to put in place of that. And I agree. Why do shop owners want those calls in? Well, because they didn't do a good enough job on the marketing plan to drive cars in, and they need car count. So they need something from the customers, not the right frame of mind.
It's part of a retention strategy that is maybe poorly timed or whatever. But I'd love to talk about that someday. Back to you, Keith.
Okay, so a side note on the hiring thing, right? My newest younger guy that I hired, it's funny, he came from a shop that built this new location close to me. But the owner's this guy that's just always off the handle, and people come in there and they go out of there. So this young kid that I hired, he was there for like 3 years before he finally left and came and joined me. And he knows all these people that have come through there that have gone to different shops. And so you just make a list and you start writing all these names down, right? If you don't make a list and write the names down, you're going to forget about it 6 months and just write down, boom. And then when you start talking to them, so tell me about this person, tell me about that
but
person.
But you're building the kind of place. You have the kind of place. Your 10 steps build the kind of place that's the preferred place in town to work at.
Yes.
And that's part of the ticket. When you get a chance to build that bench and people go through your hiring process and they see what the culture is and they meet the people, or even from the outside in, people are talking about your place in the industry. And that's one of the, got to be one of the big goals.
Yes, yes, yes. All right, so step 7, HR, compensation plans, motivation, right? Service advisors and technicians, can they, will they, do they want to? This is, you got to tie it into what's in it for them. If you send a service advisor through the Advisor Fix course and you don't have a game plan behind it, yes, we can help, but when they get back to the shop, if you haven't followed these 10 steps, they get back there and they just think it's another way of you just wanting to make more money for the owner, right? So you need to understand as a business owner, okay, how do they win? You know, you need to share in the pie of the profits, right? So your compensation plans need to tie into that. So understand what a compensation plan will do. It will take a motivated person, most motivated person I know personally. A side note is Jeremy O'Neill. From the time I met him 20 years ago when he came in working in his dad's service station as a young kid.
He doesn't need that kind of head pumping.
I've never seen anyone more vated. So a compensation program for a guy like him, he's like a Tiger Woods. He'll run with it and make your shop a lot of money, make happy customers. Everything will work. It will not motivate an unmotivated person.
But what you're also saying is, I need to grow this great business. We're going to do all this stuff, and I'm going to share.
Yes.
Because I don't want you to see me driving the beautiful car and living in the great house, which are great spoils from hard work. I get all that. But if you're willing to share, they're willing to do anything for you.
They will. And you know what? When you do it that way, they want to see you as an owner in that house. They want to see you an owner in that car because they want to see that you're a successful owner, the shop's successful. But if they don't feel like they're sharing in it with you, then yes, it creates the opposite effect.
And I've heard that a lot. Here it is. There's the new truck, and I haven't gotten a raise in 2.5 years.
That's exactly it.
It's just not the right way.
And that's what I get in and talk about, the numbers, numbers, numbers. I need to have this bottom line, but you start to do it at the expense of your employees?
It's almost like you're starting to grow your business. You've got some cash ahead. Your NOI is improving, and you go out and make that next lifestyle change. Or you do something for the business that really won't help the business, like buy the owner's new vehicle. It's almost like, what's in it for the team? You need to make that one of your first priorities.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. So on the compensation plans, and you know, these have been around for years in the industry with, you know, flagged hours for technicians, you know, a commission for your service advisors. I like my plan for my service advisors. It's a 3-tiered commission program, right? Number one is on the sales that we collect. Number two is in what the authorizations they got for that week. Because if they know the sales are going to be big, they might lay down and not continue to get authorizations and feed that pipeline for next week. So the majority that comes from the sales that week, a little bit more comes from the authorization goal. And then there's a clause in there that says you get any reviews four stars or less, you take a 10% hit. So that way they just can't do whatever they want to try to make the sale and have an unhappy customer, because then it'll hit their pocketbook. So when they add it all up, it becomes the commission goal that they're looking for and the income that they're looking for.
In the beginning, was that what you had? Have you tweaked it lately?
Where I've had to tweak it over the years is with obviously reviews, you know, because when I first bought the business in 2003, there were no review sites back in those days. So,
okay. Oh, yeah. So you added that.
Yeah. So as many customer complaints. I've always had that percentage of sales with the authorization because I learned that from previous consulting, and we teach us in Advisor Fix, those authorizations is your focus. And I teach this in the Management is Dead course. The service advisor has to feel like they have accomplished something. Most of the times they don't. They spend their day scatterbrained, dealing with all kinds of junk, garbage, complaints. They might have a good sales day or they might not, right? Technicians know when they go home, oh, I fixed that car. I fixed it. Look, I'm done. I got it. That car's gone. The customer's driving. Service advisor doesn't know what they did. And so what I teach in Management is Dead is you need to have a daily authorization goal. And when the service writers hit it, you will be amazed how they, woohoo, woohoo, I hit it. I did my job. And they don't stop. They'll go even further with it to see, what can I do? How much further can I go? How many more authorizations can I get? It is the single most important driver in your business is to do a daily authorization sheet and track it. And it gives the service writers a sense of accomplishment, a feeling of I'm attributing something to the business other than just being the guy that's running around like crazy. It works.
It also flushes out production issues early on as well. So, what I love to do is fill that pipeline every single day. You know, if you have a great day, you come back the next day and you sell the same amount of the authorization, get those authorizations done. And if there's a production issue, it shows itself immediately and you can fix it day two of the month instead of getting your P&L 15 days later and being reactive.
How are you paying your techs?
Flagged hour. Okay. Now, that's a great question because this leads into the next part here of this step is that it isn't just compensation in step seven in motivation. It's also knowing your HR laws in your state. You are now a business owner. Well, guess what? You know what? As a business owner, you're the HR manager. You're the marketing manager. You're the bookkeeper. You're the CPA for the business. You're everything. You need to have these skill sets. And if you don't, you need to get them because you're running a business. You know, it's not just fixing cars anymore. So when I say you pay your technicians on flagged hour, know your state laws. Can you pay flagged hour in your state? There was some talk not that long ago in California where you can't pay them flagged hour. Like, no, you can't. I got audited by it was a random audit a year ago, and the state board came in, Cal OSHA came in, and EDD came in. And I'm like, oh, they're like, oh, nothing. No one's complaining. We're just doing random audits. I had zero problems. They were so happy with me. I had those labor law posters. Most people don't know. You got to have them all. You also have to fill them out. They walked in, they saw those things filled out. They're like, oh my gosh, you're going to make this so easy for us. We've been writing people up all day. So you got to know your HR law. So in California, they asked for a time card. They asked for the guy's paycheck. They looked at it and they said, you're fine. So you just need to know that, like in California, they consider, I think in most states, they consider technicians hourly employees. That doesn't mean you have to pay them hourly, but you better be in compliance with all the hourly laws. So in other words, in California, if a technician has their own tools, that means they get to pay double minimum wage. So instead of $11.50, it's $23. So you need to make sure at the end of that week, $23 an hour times 40 hours, he better be making that. Otherwise, you're in violation of minimum wage laws. So if he's not making that regular, you've got a problem on your hands. Also, the same thing with overtime, right? You got to have time cards because they consider them. If you don't have time cards, and we know that.
The overtime piece is really touchy when it comes to labor laws and bonuses. It is. And good point. Thank you for
yes.
that.
So when you put these compensation plans together to motivate your guys, do they want to make sure you're in compliance with all those laws? Because I don't want to sit here and give you information and you go implement and find out, ooh, I was in violation of all these labor laws. So you're the owner of that business. It's going to hurt you. You need to do your homework and research and understand what HR requirements are. And of course, let's talk about shop meetings. I have never been a shop meeting guy. I found most employees don't like shop meetings. Are they necessary once in a while? Yes, they are. But what I've always found, and I've managed my shop by this, I just do one-on-ones. If there's an issue and it's with a technician, I just go back and talk to them. Confrontation is so easy because it's non-confrontational when you just talk to somebody. You know, when it's always a negative, negative, negative thing, then it's an issue. So I just go back and talk one-on-one.
So many owners have, weekly scrums and they have they'll meet with their service advisor team on a Monday, go over the numbers. They'll meet with the entire company, say, on a Friday morning. It's early. It's 15 minutes. I'm surprised with all of these great steps along the way. What prompted you to say no meetings? Something happened, or do you just weren't a meeting guy?
I run my business with a very important thing in mind. I remember what it was like to be an employee. I remember what I didn't like, and I know what most of their employees didn't like either.
Well, you know, meetings, you may have been going to meetings that were, they have a meeting to have a meeting.
I mean, right, exactly.
Poor agendas, nobody gets a chance to talk.
When everyone knows what they need to do on a daily and weekly basis, the meetings that you need to hold are a lot less. The only time you need to have a group meeting is if there's some problem in the entire shop that needs to be discussed. Other than that, the one-on-ones do everything. I mean, a one-on-one meeting with my managers when I'm there, 5 minutes each. Where are we at? What's the goal? Where's the authorization goal?
Got it. Okay.
You know, there's a Yelp review that didn't turn out good. What happened there? You know, we need to fix that. Let's find out who this customer is. Let's call them. Let's make this right.
No need to rehash the global responsibilities and goals. Just do it one-on-one. I mean, I'm challenging your thinking. It's not that I agree or disagree with it.
I know. Challenge it.
Yeah, cool.
That's the way I've run my business. And the guys that I've recently hired, Paul, who's been there 5 years, came from another shop, and he hated the meetings at that shop. They had technician meetings every Wednesday morning. And I've also hired a service advisor from that shop, and they had service writer meetings Tuesday. Remember my general manager? He was also from that shop. He hated the meetings. Because they just felt they were overkill, unnecessary. I'm not saying don't have them.
Well, the meeting leader obviously was not a good meeting leader, and it wasn't their meeting. It was his meeting.
But it isn't anyway.
I totally get it.
But it's not corporate America where guys are working in that department across over there and this department over there, and we got to get everyone on the same page. Your people are right there. They're where you're sitting. They're where you're sitting. I just talk throughout the day and walk through the shop and make comments, talk, and that seems to get done what I need to get done. Again, that goes into that motivation thing, treating people like people. That works really well for me. All right, so now we've got this thing going, right? So we've got our assessment. We've got our improvement goals. We've got advisor fix. We've got, like, our technicians. We've made hiring, firing decisions, keeping. Now we're motivating them with the right compensation plans, the right understanding our HR laws so we're not in violation of that, and keeping everybody motivated together as a team. Now, and only now, should you do step eight. Remember you asked me earlier, can you get steps out of order? Step eight is marketing.
And step eight is locked in. locked and loaded, marketing.
Marketing.
Dude, that's a great, great point. So in my shop, Freedom Auto Repair, 13 months in now, we got a lot of cars. And I always get asked, are you guys going to do tires? Not ready for that yet. I don't want the volume because I don't have the team in place to handle the flow of work that would take that. So our flow is perfect right now. We can handle what we have. And if you get too busy too fast...
Absolutely. So if you don't have the right people in place and you bring more people in, guess what? You're going to increase your bad reviews and you're going to increase your problems.
I have to tell you, Keith, I agree with you. I mean, if the house isn't in order, don't preach about it.
Well, what do most shop owners do? Well, I'm hurting. I need more money. So let's market. Let's get more customers in here. And you just make the problem worse, right? So before you want to go, I need aggressive marketing plans. No, you need to, first of all, like you said, get your house in order. So that when you do the marketing, it comes in, it's really going to pay dividends and a great ROI. And there's all kinds of marketing ideas that you can do. I love marketing that doesn't cost me a lot of money. So there's the old school marketing, right? You cut a check for $2,500, give it to the direct mail company, cross your fingers and hope they come in, right? So you're spending $2,500. You don't know if a customer's coming in. You may not. I love programs that do this. So one of the little marketing tip I do at my shop is we have these free oil change vouchers. And when the customers come in and they're like, I tell everybody about you. We're like, well, why don't you earn some credit with us? Here, I'm going to give you 5 oil change vouchers. We're going to write your name on them. Hand these out to your coworkers, your friends. They're going to get a free oil change with us. And everyone that comes back in with your name on it, we're going to put $20 credit on your file. So you can, you know, so if you get done with these 5 and you want more, let us know. I've had customers eat those things up. Yeah, it is. But it's not
a free oil change and $100. What did you spend in 1 year on that?
I haven't tracked it for what I've actually spent in 1 year. It cost me 5 free oil changes of people that are in my shop and I'm checking their car out, right? And then I put $100 credit on that customer's file who's gone out and marketed the world for me.
Matt Purcell from Atlanta from Revolution Benz. I interviewed him probably a month ago now. He has this very similar program and he tracked it. And it cost him $6,000 for the year. And he says, I have no other marketing expense but that. And his business grew 10%.
Awesome. Exactly.
That is amazing.
The only reason that I asked you, Keith, is because I remember Matt told me, and I was just trying to compare them. That's all.
I've never thought about tracking. I should track it. It just works so well for me. I've never worried about it because my marketing costs is so small. So I'll give you a little story. A guy came over and he wanted to mystery shop my company. He has another auto repair shop in Southern California. So he comes down and he mystery shops me and, he nitpicks a bunch of stuff. I'm like, okay, that's valid. Yeah, this, that. So then we went to lunch and we compared financial statements, right? Now he does substantially more in sales than I, not a lot more. I do 2 million. I think he was 3 million, right? And he was talking about how 3 million, all the problems go away. We had a completely different, well, money problems because you have so much cash coming. I always say a surplus of sales will overcome a slew of problems. That's just the way it is. We compared financial statements. He has a completely different philosophy than me. His business is get that customer in and whatever you got to do, rental car, car wash, he spends a fortune on that stuff. So we looked at his financial statements like for the month, right? So his rental car bill, $4,000, mine, $200. His advertising bill, $6,000, mine, $1,000. And we were going through some of these numbers. And when he got to the bottom, he did this, not me. He, darn it, Keith, you're making as much as I am on the bottom, and I'm spending all this money on all this other stuff.
You get a million more, bigger shop, lots more production, bigger marketing budget, and you beat him on the bottom line.
Well, we were neck and neck on the bottom line.
Neck and neck.
And he was surprised that I was able to get away without doing all the stuff that he was doing. And I asked him, I said, well, let me ask you this. Why are you doing all this stuff? You know, I understand washing cars, but all this other stuff. And he goes, well, I'm hoping it'll distract the customer from the cost of the repair. And when he said that, I'm like, this is not, 1998 anymore. This is 2017. People have so much access to information and stuff. If you think for 1 minute that they haven't looked at, what the repair costs at other places before they even authorize with you or after the fact, because it's so easy to go online and find out. I mean, it was a different philosophy. So it was shocking that when he said that, but getting back to marketing, I love marketing programs that won't cost you anything until the customer is standing at your counter. And so I've got different marketing programs I've worked with over the year that I share on AdvisorFix that are home runs.
Cool.
It costs you, yes, but not until they're in front of you. Now it's up to you and you get to meet a customer. So step 9, now you've gone through this, preferably with a coach, unless you're completely comfortable doing it yourself, but most aren't. Most are going to have a company or a coach walk them, help them through these steps. Once you now have gone through these steps and you've seen how this process works, you're learning the whole time as your own business owner, right? Oh, okay, I see. I need to assess my business regularly. I need to set improvement goals. I need AdvisorFix. I need, know my technicians, my personnel. I need to make hiring, firing decisions, HR. I need to learn motivation and then marketing. Now, step 9, self-coaching. Now we've helped you do it. Now you do it. Do you need us anymore? That's up to you. If you would like the assistance, we can certainly give it to you. Self-coaching. Now you go back and do those same 8 steps that we just walked you through. And we'll still hear if you need our help, but now you do it.
Oh, wow. Now the business is at a different level and you can take it even higher. Oh, that's awesome.
Self-coaching, meaning now you do it. And this becomes this perpetual cycle and circle to pay attention to all of this stuff. Where is the leadership development piece in here? Is it under self-coaching?
It is.
Okay. Because you've got to learn to be a good leader somewhere along the line, but it took from 1 to 8 to get me to realize that I have to maybe advisor fix myself or leadership fix myself or something.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. The reason I put this step in here is because I could certainly say, oh, that's it, 8 steps and just stay coaching with us for the rest of your life. But ideally, I don't want you to do that. I want you to empower yourself. I want you to get the freedom like I have in my shop and become that millionaire shop owner, that you have the house on the hill. You don't have to be at the shop every day. You're at the shop because you want to be, not because you have to be. That's not going to happen if you don't learn to self-coach. So you might stay with us a little bit longer while we help you in step 9 on self-coaching. Okay, now you watch us do it. Now we're going to watch you do it, right? And we're going to watch you with your people and stuff, and we're going to make some suggestions, comments along the way.
So the accountability piece that happened in steps 1 through 8, which I know in a good coaching relationship, you're going to do the who, the when, the why. You're going to build the accountability piece. Part of self-coaching is going to have to – I mean, don't people want to hang around because they need that pressure?
They do.
They want that pressure.
They do.
And some got to where they are today. Do they really learn? So here's my question. In your experience, when the accountability piece goes away, does the business falter?
It depends on the shop owner. Remember the technician service advisor, can they? Will they? Do they want to? That applies to a shop owner.
Got it.
Can they do it?
Got it.
Will they do it? Do they want to do it? And step nine is basically that assessment. They're either going to figure it out on their own, do it on their own as we work with them through this whole process and even help them to do the coaching, or they're not, you know, and I can't answer that for everybody. That's up to them. And, you know, some guys probably shouldn't be in business ownership.
Strong personal disciplines. I mean, it's truly, you know, in many cases, they have to do a 360 and a rethink. I remember I'm going back in my mind now thinking of some of the interviews that I've done. And the guys have said, yeah, I got into coaching. I got out for a year. My business wasn't the same. And the reason that I got back to the coaching company was strictly for the accountability piece. I knew that every Monday when I put the key in the door, I had a power beyond me, a coach that I trusted, that I paid for that accountability, and my business blossomed again. So there's some people that want the structure. Some people learn the structure.
I agree with you. I mean, some people do need to keep on the accounting and keep the coaching. Some people need that handheld. I noticed that when I worked for the consulting company before. There were some people that just... They want that. Jeremy was like that. He told you when he first met me, you know, that, Keith, come on, I just want you to coach me personally. Coach me personally. I'm like, I'll do it, Jeremy. You don't need to pay me anything. I just want to see you succeed, right? So there are people like that, that like that accountability, like that coaching. And even they might be a driven individual, but they just like that, you know, tell me I'm doing a good job, continue to work with me. And other people might say, okay, I've got it.
I did a great interview with Chris Clodier, and we did a serial entrepreneur thing, and we talked about the loneliness up top of an organization, and you just clicked my and probably Chris's will be out before we get this episode released. And it's that phenomena that you're the entrepreneur, the leader of the company, and you've got nobody saying, attaboy, nice job. And there's nobody giving you that direction. And you know, that's that loneliness, that entrepreneurial struggle that happens.
Yeah, and I love the self-coaching part, and you know what Keith is talking about, I live it every day. And it's when I'm on the way to work, I listen to motivational, I listen to Carm Capriotto, Remarkable Results podcast, all that stuff's piping in. And then sometimes I go home and I need just that mental break, right? So that's where you'll listen to music or something else. But we all know there are those things at the end of the day where something happened in your business and you go, I should have handled it differently. And here's the thing, go teach a class and go teach a process on inspecting cars. Okay. Well, what happens behind closed doors? Does your shop deliver what you teach? The thoughts there, the theories there, but what is it in application? And the self-coaching makes you become aware of your weaknesses, and you're either going to change them or you're not. And you know, every single day when we go home, there's things that we should have handled differently that we didn't. And the question is, are you going to be that person that you want to be with those long-term goals? And that's where the self-coaching comes back in to reinforce that.
Thank you. Good stuff.
Yep. My bullet points on step nine are, now you do it, we'll help you. Coach yourself, coach your people, monitor the numbers, and coach to keep on track to hit the goals.
Got it. Makes sense. I can't wait to hear number 10.
It's the best part of the whole thing. It's not as detailed. It's freedom.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that is like, there's the star on top of the cake right there.
Now you've accomplished what you want. You got a business. It's running itself. When I did the Management is Dead seminar, I closed with something that was kind of corny, but I liked it. So when I was a kid, there was a movie that my mom made me watch, scared the Jesus out of me because kids were getting stuck in chocolate tubes and stuff. But it was Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory. And there is a scene in that movie where it's their first going on the tour, and he opens up his imagination room and everything is edible. And the kids are eating stuff that you didn't think could be eaten. And he's singing the song about imagination, and he's got the Oompa Loompas. And I'm like, isn't that all what we wanted when we started our business? We imagined what our business was going to look like and what it was going to be. And has it become that yet? And in most cases, no, it is nowhere near close to what our imagination was. It has this problem and that problem and that problem. I'm not saying your problems are going to go away, but if you follow these 10 steps, that 10 steps freedom, you're in that imagination room. It's your own business. Now it's your creation. It's what you have, and it's running itself. You know, the Oompa Loompas are making the chocolate and doing everything. Everything's working together like it should work, and everyone's happy and a part of it. Now, I know it's just a movie, and it's kind of corny.
Eat your way to success? No.
There you go.
But I love it. I mean, that's the pinnacle. I guess we would want to work really hard, get to self-coaching, so that the freedom that I dreamed about when I started this business could really happen.
So those are the 10 steps to freedom.
Wow.
Those are what I followed in my business. And you can do it. And the reason I know you can do it is because I did it, and I'm nobody special, trust me. I mean, I sat at the feet of a consultant. I read a lot of business books and stuff. But I will also share something with you, that consultant that I worked with didn't think I had the business sense to do it.
You know, what's so interesting is that so many shop owners want to become consultants, and you were a consultant who wanted to become a shop owner.
I know. I always say I want to do a seminar that says what I learned going backwards.
That's great. I love it. I can't tell you. I really enjoyed this. I think the learning moments for the listenership of the podcast in this episode was huge. I know this is longer than we normally do, but this is talk radio, baby. If you like listening to Rush, you're going to love listening to what we did here, right? That's how I think about it. Keith Benline from Roberts Auto Service in San Diego and Jeremy O'Neill from Advisor Fix. Man, it was just great to have you here on the Vision Studio.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you, Kern.
Hey, thanks Keith Benline and Jeremy O'Neill for sharing the strategy behind these 10 steps to a million-dollar shop. Tough to argue with these tactics as great building blocks to strong people, great culture, sales growth, and profitability. See the show notes for Keith and Jeremy's bios, previous episodes, and the key talking points of this interview. Go to remarkableresults.biz/E333. Honored to have you here today. We'll talk soon.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.